Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to turn the page and consider Yah's prediction, Yahweh's prediction regarding the times that we live in. God has told us in Yahshayah, Isaiah 17, that the Damascus is going to fall, that the Syrian government is going to fail, that marauding bands of terrorists acting more like animals than humans are going to devastate the city and the country, and that it's ultimately going to lead to the divestiture of Israeli land, making the country vulnerable, at which point God's going to invite his covenant children home. At that point, he tells us that utter devastation is going to rain down on Israel, and that its people are going to be ravaged. It's going to be the most horrible imaginable assault. He's going to speak of a literal flood of Muslims armed and crazed coming into the country, beyond the country's defensive fortifications. And then God says that this has happened because the Israelis have chosen to rely on themselves, on their defense forces, on their own ingenuity, on their own capabilities, instead of upon Yahweh. The passage reads as follows: indeed, because you have completely ignored and actually forgotten, becoming totally ignorant of the God of your salvation and deliverance and the rock of your protection, you do not remember or mention the Most High. And Jews don't. They never say Yahweh's name, ever. Therefore, you plant the Lord's vines, speaking of this affinity for Adonis, the Lord, who is Satan. And you continually sow an illegitimate, unauthorized, and loathsome means to estrangement via vine branch that needs to be pruned. Yesterday, in a discussion with Glenn, who I think is still with us here, we talked about the Adonis Gardens. In Walter Burkett's Greek Religion, we find affirmations that directly tie into Yahweh's prophecy regarding Adonis and the religious worship of the Lord, especially in context of planting and sowing. And I quote, "Women sit by the gate weeping for Tammuz, or they offer incense to Baal on their rooftops, and they plant pleasant plants. These are the very features of the Adonis legend, which is celebrated on the flat rooftops, on which seeds are sown, which quickly germinate, creating Adonis gardens, where the climax is a loud lamentation for the dead god." End quote. It's exactly as God had said. It was, and it derived its origins from Babylon, the very thing that God has asked us to walk away from. It was rooted in weeping for Tammuz, who was a precursor of Adonis. It associated with Tammuz with Baal, the Lord. The primary Hebrew word for Lord is Baal. It is the name of the pagan god emblazoned in the sun. Tammuz, the son of the sun. Baal, the Lord. All tied into the Adonis legend, where plants were planted on rooftops which quickly germinated and then died so that they could exclaim their cries for their dying god. It was all incorporated into Christianity as well. This is specifically what God is saying that the Israelites had done. As was the case of Asherah, the Adonis cult, and I quote, provided an opportunity for the unbridled expression of emotion in the strictly circumscribed life of women, in accordance with the festivals of Demeter, according to Walter Burkett in his book on the Greek religion. Demeter was a Mother Earth goddess associated with the harvest. She presided over the sacred law and the cycle of life and death. End quote. It is also telling that the Feast of Adonis, celebrated in the spring, coincide with Passover. It celebrated the death and resurrection of Adonis in complete harmony with the Christian Easter. According to William Smith and his A Dictionary of Greek and Roman Antiquities, I quote, "It was celebrated over 2 days. On the first, statues of Adonis were laid out as corpses, and the faithful observed all of the rites customary at funerals, beating themselves and uttering lamentations, imitating the cries of Venus, which was the Roman name of Asherah, over the death of her lover. The second day was spent in merriment and feasting because Adonis was allowed to return to life, resurrected, the statues re-erected." This is remarkably similar to the Christian festivals of Good Friday and Easter Sunday. Moreover, considering where this prophecy began, the Adonis cult migrated from Athens to Syria in the 2nd century CE. Also telling, in 270 BCE, Theocritus describes a public and state-sponsored Adonis festival, just like the one we have described in Egypt. Therefore, it is the religious tendency to promote Satan as the Lord that Yahweh is lamenting. As a result of advancing the interests of the adversary, the Israelites would receive a devastating blow from their enemies. This is what will lead them to being pruned and cause them to remain estranged a while longer. Those in whom there is no hope, those who are unwilling to walk away from religion, from trusting in and relying upon their military, from an affinity with their government institutions, will be pruned, so that the rest of the vine, the rest of the plant that is known as Yisrael might live. That which is corrupted beyond hope has to be eliminated. Now, Israelites pushed Yahweh aside because he got in the way of their religion. They isolated and they deceived themselves with all manner of religious arguments and political deceptions. This then is Yeshayah, Isaiah 17:11. In that day you raise your garden, and in the early part of the day your seed will bud and sprout, reaping a shaken and corrupt heap, which is piled up and thrust aside. In the daytime there will be weakness, affliction, and tribulation, including the influence of incurable physical pain and mental anguish. Here we have God telling us that he was aware of the Adonis festivals, of the dying and resurrecting God, of the gardens planted on rooftops that sprouted quickly and then died so they could lament the death of their wannabe God. And he says, yes, I understand that you can make things grow, but what you plant isn't going to last. This then should be compared to Israelites returning from the Holocaust, returning from Europe, returning to Israel, and in the shallow ground, getting the desert to bloom, but only briefly. Their efforts will be utterly thwarted by the flood of Muslim militants who are on the precipice of destroying everything they touch in the promised land. So as mourning of the Israelite independent experience turns to day, there will be weakness and affliction, a great tribulation, including the influence of incurable physical pain and mental anguish. Their iniquity is complete. Those who cannot be reconciled will be pruned away. It isn't a very pretty picture, is it, Glenn, of what's going to happen to a self-reliant nation?
No, not at all. As you were speaking, I was thinking about, you know, how hopeless things are in the world, you know, apart from my life, because, you know, Judaism is defiled, Christianity is defiled, secular governments are defiled. They're all crazy and power grabbing and competing and fighting and warring, and the numbers of population are increasing and the debt's increasing and the weapons are increasing. This cannot have a good end. So, you know, Yahweh's plan is the only fire door from a very corrupt world.
But, it is. And no matter how promising things may look for a while, you know, in Israel, look at they won their War of Independence, 1948, against 100-1 odds. They won the 6 Days War against 100-1 odds in 1967. They won the surprise attack of the Yom Kippur War in 1974 against 100-1 odds and a superior force, both in equipment and technology and in manpower. And they, at great cost, have been able to keep the Muslims at bay, and they've been able, at great cost, even with the country boycotted by most countries around the world, have actually created a prosperous economy, much of it based on agriculture. And now, what God is saying is that that's short-lived. You know, what you've done in the last 50 years, the 60 years, it is very short-lived. It's going to fail because you've done so relying on your own industry. And human institutions are not worthy. They will all fail. It's why God began this whole covenant experiment, saying, walk away from your country. Walk away from governance, from politics, from religion, from patriotism, from militarism. It's all going to fail you. And that's what he said in this particular case. So, independent of Yahweh, we don't survive. Even in Yisrael, even among Yisraelites, this is the reality. Those who have chosen to be self-reliant are going to perish. It is only those who have come to embrace the second and third codicils of the covenant, who have come to know Yahweh as He is, and choose to trust and rely upon Him, that will live. As is the case with Yahweh's instructions regarding what's good and bad for us to eat, God is using a variety of examples to demonstrate that those who consume garbage, those who play around in the trash, especially in the form of bad ideas, will get sick and they're going to die. He is warning us to be careful regarding the seeds we plant, because they can have the same effect. Now, he is referencing a religious garden, a religious rite, but he really isn't talking about actual gardens, although there's a connection with the land blossoming, if you will, when the Jews returned, and how short-lived that's going to be. Because God does have an advantage. He's the only one that I'm aware of who's able to use a metaphor, and the metaphors don't ever seem to fail. You know, as they say, God can create a metaphor that can walk on all fours. The rest of us have to say, well, this metaphor works in this one unique situation. But here, this one has three legs to it. It has the leg of, yes, the Jews have come back to plant gardens and make the promised land bloom. But all of that soon is going to be deforested with the chemical agents and and be tromped underfoot by tens of millions of Islamic jihadists. And they're going to have so many sanctions that the agriculture they grow to sell around the world is not going to be marketable. And he is also referencing these gardens of the Lord, of Adonis, and how they are related to Babylon and to Tammuz, and to a dying and resurrected God. And says, you know, you ought not engage in that sort of thing. And so it plays to the history of the Babylonian religion, the history of the Christian religion. And it also plays on a symbolic spiritual level, where if you wallow in the trash, if you consume garbage, you're going to get sick and die. Specifically, since Yahweh has told us that the fig tree, which represents Israel, will sprout as a result of the Israelites returning to their land, he is indicating that the agricultural revolution that they brought to the parched earth will be short-lived. Having seeds of dissent, they will reap the pain of separation. Estranged from God and aligned with evil, many of Israel's initial success will give way to mental anguish and to physical pain. As the world they've come to know, as the world they have built, crumbles around them. Unlike those who are gleaned, they're going to endure the full brunt of the tribulation. Now, the tribulation isn't focused on America. It isn't focused on Russia. It isn't focused on Europe or on China. You know, this tribulation is so much about man in concert with the adversary doing horrible things to humankind. Where is the place? Who are the people that the adversary most wants to destroy, most wants to injure, most wants to silence? Is it not the promised land and the children of the covenant? This is where we should expect the harshness of the tribulation to focus. And indeed it does. This next prophetic statement alerts us to the impending peril of what in Ezekiel is called the Magog War. It's an alliance of every Islamic nation on earth, of all Muslims, unified in one cause, that is the destruction of Israel. The final worldwide Islamic assault against Israel is what is manifest here. Beginning in what I think will be the spring of 2027, this tidal wave of terrorism will be worse than the combined conquests of the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Greeks, or the Romans. It will be more pervasive and more vicious than the Holocaust. With these words, we are witnessing World War III. It begins, woe, be wary of, oy, expressing dissatisfaction and a declaration of impending judgment and of doom as part of a prophetic warning. A great many nations, Rabim Amim, a multitude of compatriots and kinsmen related by race, religion, and culture, roaring in hordes of agitated terrorists, Hamon, similar to loudly groaning seas. We'll consider each of these words. Why Yahweh used the metaphor of rushing waters, of flooding waters, of the seas, to describe these terrorists. This is the consequence of the Syrian war. This is the consequence of the divestiture of Israeli land that has been promoted by the United States. Woe, be wary of, a great many nations, Rabim Amim, roaring in hordes of agitated terrorists, Hamon, multitudes of confused and loud-mouthed militants, flaunting their abundant wealth, clamoring emotionally in massively disorderly riots, enraged and crying out in turmoil, similar to, ka, corresponding to, loudly groaning, hama, confused and chaotic, the uproar and disturbing snarling growl of angry seas, Yamim. They will wail, Hama, they will groan in agitated and anguished screams, snarling like confused and chaotic terrorists. And the roar of societal chaos, Shaun, the crying out in a horrible uproar as things crash down around the rebellious. Of the people of these nations will be like the horrible uproar of the waters, especially floodwaters. Intensely and in great numbers, they will continually strive to desolate and lay waste. Yahshayah, salvation is from Yahweh, Isaiah 17:12. This is the fate that awaits Israel. It's not the fate of having an Iranian nuclear bomb explode over Tel Aviv. Nope, it's the fate of millions, perhaps tens of millions. I suspect in the range of 150 million Islamic jihadists bearing down on Israel, wielding all manner of weapons of war, shouting Allahu Akbar, some flying American F-15s, some propelled by American tanks, others arriving in American personnel carriers, most holding American rifles with American anti-tank rockets, with American shoulder-fired missiles, surface-to-air missiles. Yes, America is the largest supplier of the nations that despise Israel. The weaponry that will be brought to bear against the promised land and the chosen people will bear the hallmarks of American manufacturing. And they will be carried by Muslims screaming Allahu Akbar. You will see the rage in their eyes. You will hear the hostility in the tone of their voice. And they're going to flood into Israel like floodwaters. They're going to crash into the shores like raging seas, eroding everything that they touch, destroying everything that they touch. And just as the case with a mighty tsunami wave, just as the case with the ocean's waves eroding the land, just as is the case with a flood, it will be unstoppable. Nothing Israel can put out against them will stop the flow of evil, of destructiveness, of terror. And everything that is flooded by this onslaught of Muslims will be destroyed because they strive to desolate and lay waste. They want to ruin everything they touch, and they will even destroy themselves in the process. Now, there are several ways to interpret Yahweh's repeated references to the seas and to floodwaters. And since Yahweh has the propensity to communicate in a way that most every way something can be interpreted, particularly from the proper perspective that it all is true, we'd be wise to consider each of them. Now, the first is obvious from the immediate context, as it reflects the nature of water. Tsunami waves may be among the most destructive force on earth. And stormy seas, particularly those driven by massive storms, roar ashore, flooding and eroding everything in their path. Look at the aftermath of the hurricane that struck New Orleans. Nearly as deadly, and also look at what happened recently in the Philippines. Almost as deadly. Floodwaters are often widespread, massive in scope. They are unstoppable and devastating. Therefore, it would be reasonable to assume that this predicted attack on Israel is going to be perpetrated by vast multitudes of people coming into the land, wave after wave, loudmouth, relentless, and awesomely destructive. They're going to be unstoppable, inundating the land, leaving death and destruction in their wake. The second option is nearly as certain. It stems from the symbolic distinction Yahweh often makes between the land and the sea, with the land representing Yisrael and the sea denoting Gentile nations. As such, the reference reveals a collective attack by Goyim against Yehudim. The third consideration is tactical. It may be a stretch, but I'd not be too quick to dismiss it if I were you. I think it's at least worthy of your consideration. Since Yahweh has said that a multitude of people from a great many nations will flood into Israel, that they will crash into the land from the sea, we might be wise to envision a seaborne invasion from all directions. Under this scenario, many will come from the west aboard ships across the Mediterranean Sea. These militants may have been indoctrinated to despise Israel in Turkey, Lebanon, Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, and or Cyprus, all of which exist along the Great Sea. France, Spain, and Italy are home to more than 8 million Muslims. They may travel this route as well. Also, the Baltic nations around the Mediterranean have large Islamic populations, especially Bosnia, Albania, and Kosovo. But let's not rule out Islamic nations from the Caucasus Mountains who will likely sail across the Black Sea and through the Bosphorus Straits into the Aegean Sea before washing ashore in the Promised Land. The nations that these jihadists may hail from include Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, or even the Chechenian area of the Russian Federation. And then from the south, sailing up the Red Sea, we might expect jihadists from Somalia, the Sudan, Chad, Niger, Mali, Nigeria, Yemen, Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, Abu Dhabi, Oman, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Myanmar, Indonesia, even Malaysia. After all, it's now known that they can't fly airplanes. Maybe they'll have better luck with ships. And while that covers the Muslims who may approach from the seas, we should also consider the floodwaters. In Israel, there is but one floodplain, and it is found in the northeast part of the country in Galilee, just below the Syrian Golan Heights. Through this now vulnerable portal, we might expect millions more mujahideen, this time from Syria, Iraq, Iran, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia. As we continue this prophecy and review it a second time at the conclusion of this presentation of this material, I'm going to systematically go through all 50 majority Islamic countries. I'm going to tell you what percentage of the population is Muslim, how many Muslims there are in each country, name the country, and then collectively predict how many jihadists will emerge from each of these countries collectively to march upon Israel. That's how I've come up with the number whereby I anticipate that we will witness, I hope not to be here, but that the world will witness 150 million Muslims flooding into Israel. There is one final potentiality as it relates to interpreting God's focus here on raging seas and floodwaters, one I hope isn't accurate, but since this chapter delineates the negative consequences of America's intervention in this region, and they next adroitly describes the United States geographically, culturally, politically, and militarily, there is reason to suspect that the U.S. Navy and Air Force will engage against Israel and in support of its Islamic, political, military, and economic allies throughout the region. It is a very small step from providing Israel's enemies with copious amounts of the world's deadliest weapons and actually using them. Well, I pray this does not happen. I would not be surprised if America not only supported the Islamic action against Israel, just as the British did in 1948 and 1967, but also launched its own strikes after that war is lost by the Mujahideen. There are 1.5 billion Muslims, far too many of whom are jihadists. They are a majority in approximately 50 countries around the globe, most in the Middle East. Those are in Asia, not too terribly far away. Those places, while influencing the rest of the world with their carrot and stick, OPEC oil and terrorism, will form massive and vociferous armies. They will seek to destroy Israel. They have sought to destroy Israel four times already. During the Holocaust in the 1930s, and Israel's War of Independence in 1948, and the Six Days War of 1967, and again during the Yom Kippur War, the surprise attack by Islam in 1974. We'll pick up this prophecy and understanding. Now, if you think that I might be a bit presumptuous in identifying the roaring hordes of agitated terrorists who continually strive to ruin everything they touch, destroying themselves in the process as Muslims, remember that the past is the best predictor of the future. Their previous campaigns over the past 1,400 years, and especially during the most recent 70, have left little doubt that those who assail Israel the loudest, that those who have pledged to destroy the nation, those who commit 99% of today's terrorist acts, those whose militaries have been equipped for this specific mission, and those who have attempted this various things multiple times, four times as a matter of fact, in the last 70 years, are the same people being depicted in this prophecy. Call me crazy, but seems pretty obvious. Muslims were given a reason to die by Muhammad, a reason to kill by their God. This battle is inevitable. The Quran is a more anti-Semitic book than is Hitler's Mein Kampf. Allah will never be satisfied until every Jew is dead. Mujahideen, by the millions, looting, destroying, killing everything in sight, while shouting Allahu Akbar, particularly at Jews, Yehudim, those who were chosen by Yahweh, will try to impose the false perception that Allah is older, bigger, and greater, as they attempt to destroy God's land and His people. And sadly, much of their devastation will be caused by American weapons, because the United States is the leading merchant of death. Yahweh's prophetic words were selected here with great precision. So subtle nuances become particularly important when various terms are used to describe similar events. There are many shadings here which should not be overlooked. We have been told that multitudes will scream and lay waste. With pomp and tumult, the Islamic jihadists from nations all over the world will roar against and destroy everything in their path, devastating themselves in the process. It sounds a lot like the carnage we are witnessing in Syria, which is why God told us that this would be a prelude to this war. The cries of Mujahideen will be as loud and relentless as the raging of the seas, devoid of morals, confused, and enraged. By their religion, these Muslims will take what is not theirs and destroy what they do not take. It will be gang mentality, manifest in religion and politics on the most massive scale ever witnessed by humankind. Now, this prophetic vision was all-encompassing. It is horrific. So Yahweh, through Yashaya, continued to paint it with these words. He said the people of these nations will be like the horrible uproar of the waters, massively great, will be their devastation and desolation. But he, Yahweh, will rebuke them, issuing a warning against them while criticizing their corruption. And so they will be forced to flee on account of being alienated, on account of needing to be removed. And they will be chased just as the chaff on the hills before the approaching presence of the Spirit. And like a tumbleweed, like a chariot wheel as part of a troop transport before the approaching presence of the storm. This from Yashaya 17:13. As these horrible people, these religious devotees, crying Allahu Akbar as they strive to destroy, to rape, to plunder everything in their path, as a flood of terrorists, massive in scale, great in numbers, devastate everything in their path, God is going to take this moment to rebuke them, to criticize them, to denounce their corruption, and then he will force them to flee. His Spirit will blow them away as if they were chaff on the hills. And it will be the end of Islam, but not before horrible carnage. We'll be with you this time next week.